Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report, and we are chatting with Dave Erfle, founder and editor of the Junior Miner Junkie. We are going to be focusing on the precious metals, mostly on gold and the underlying gold stocks. Broad comment to start off here, Dave, is that, look, the majors are continuing to do well, especially the largest of the majors and the largest of the royalty companies. They are doing well for investors. However, as we've said throughout the last couple weeks, throughout the last couple months, the mid-tiers and the juniors really not getting that much love. And this is while gold is still holding above 1900. Dave, what's your takeaway again from this continued dichotomy between the majors getting some love, but again, it's only the big guys, the biggest of the big guys that are breaking out, compared to the lack of interest still in juniors, even though we're getting a flood of news and gold is still doing quite well?
Yeah, Corey, I think a lot of that has to do with the stock market popping back up again. You know, general equities, you know, have had a really bad Q1. It was the worst Q1. The general equities, U.S. equities and European stocks posted their weakest quarter since the pandemic crash of 2020. And yet gold futures gained over 6.5% during Q1. But if you take a look, like you said, if you take a look at the majors and the royalty companies, they've done quite well. You know, the GDXJ made a 52-week high a few weeks ago. And I think fund managers actually took a notice to that, because the very first day of Q1 last Friday, the last couple hours of trading before the weekend, you saw a big spike in the GDX with the gold price down over double digits. So I think you have some fund managers say, hey, look, I want to get some exposure to this sector. It made a 52-week high. Well, you take a look at all these other general equity sectors and they haven't done so well. So sure, that's come back to begin the week here. But, you know, also, like I said in my article last Friday, these symmetrical triangles are being created in the gold stocks, in the GDX and the GDXJ. And they're month-long symmetrical consolidation triangles, which are bullish continuation patterns. And if you take a look at the GDXJ, that 47 level is become like a magnet for good reason. You know, that was very strong resistance for quite a while. And now it's trying to become support. So this is all bullish action as far as I'm concerned. But yes, to the higher risk juniors, it's still frustrating action for investors in this sector. But at the same time, it's given you a lot of opportunity, quite a bit of opportunity to do your due diligence on these stocks and get positions in the right ones. Because we all know eventually they're going to not only catch up, but once they catch up, they're also going to outperform. And we know that's going to happen. We just don't know the timing of when it will happen. So, you know, I've continued to do this. You know, it certainly is frustrating. I know it's frustrating for my subscribers and myself. But at the same time, we look at the undervaluation of these stocks in relation to the gold price. And we take a look at that cup and handle pattern on the gold price of over a decade. And we know it's about to break out. We know the fundamental, the macro reasons are all there. And it's only a matter of time. And if you take a look at the stock market, most people now, especially the younger generation, you know, they have Robinhood accounts and they can't invest in juniors that aren't traded. They don't have a big board listing in the U.S. So that is yet to happen. We've still yet to get the younger generation into our sector. And I think it's only a matter of time. And it looks like we might have to wait until that 2000 level is broken on the gold price. I mean, sure, recently we had a close in gold above 2000, but it lasted a day. So, you know, it really didn't get that much attention because it wasn't sustained. You know, we had a $300 gold move in less than a month. And now that move is consolidating between 1900 and 1950. So I just think we just have to have more patience and use this time while you're being patient to accumulate the best juniors.
Yeah, Dave, people sure can't say they didn't have time to get into these positions because there's been plenty of time where these things have been on sale or cheap or at good valuations. A question that comes to mind, though, is that we always say that the big producers and the royalty companies get the bid first, then eventually the money comes down the food chain. But one idea that, you know, we were kind of tossing around before the call started was, Has there been a potential change, though, in the way generalists invest? Because as you mentioned, a lot of the new Robinhooders or Stash or Webull platforms can't even access OTC stocks. Not everybody's on Interactive Brokers or Fidelity where they can trade a lot of the mining stocks. And so a lot of people pile into the passively managed ETFs, whether it's GDX, GDXJ, SIL, SILJ, a couple other ones. Do you think that maybe the nature of how people invest in these gold miners, at least as far as the generalists are concerned, has changed a little bit where they're just going to pile into the ETFs? And if your company's not featured in the ETF, you may not get the love you have in previous cycles. Is that possible?
I do. Yes, I think that's very possible. And look, I mean, we had a double whammy in the sector here recently where we had the gold price consolidating within $100 price range for nearly a year while costs were going up in just about everything. So you had costs going up for all these miners and all these mining companies, yet at the same time, the gold price was just trading sideways. So it hit these miners' bottom line, and you know the juniors, all they do is consume capital. That they need to continue to raise capital and consume it. They don't throw off any cash flow. So, but all this has done is it's forced a lot of these companies down. You know, these companies that are de-risking these projects that are multi-million ounces in top-tier jurisdictions, and you know the ounce that they're trading at in the ground is extremely low, and that has continued now. And it just creates an opportunity. You just have to be very patient. And we all know how this sector works. You know, once that switch gets flipped and you have the generalists start coming into our tiny little sector, they move really quickly. It's just the timing is always very difficult to figure out. And I don't know if you saw last week, Scotiabank came out with a report talking about these majors likely merging in the very near future here, talking about Yamana and Centerra and Oceana Gold, and maybe even Barrick and Kinross, you know, doing a merger, you know, just throwing out these scenarios. And it makes sense. You know, these companies, they got to get bigger to attract that generalist investment capital. And, you know, there's just still too many companies out there, and the sector still needs to consolidate. And that always gets the generalist capital, you know, interested in the sector when we see these big mergers, and we also see some majors taking out single asset producers or single asset projects, which it has happened in the past, you know, where we had these M&A times heat up, you know, where we have some M&A coming into the sector, and then another one is announced, and another one is announced, and then it kind of stops for a while. And we're in that period right now. We're kind of in a dry period where we haven't seen M&A, but it is going to heat up. And I think when it heats up, that'll also, you know, interest the generalist investor.
So, Dave, again, this is all very focused on the majors and the majors becoming bigger to draw in some more of that large capital. But even to Shad's point about more passive investing, that's a bit worrisome for me when you look at the juniors, because you're right, juniors do just consume capital. And if people aren't individually investing in these juniors, or quite frankly, giving them money when they're raising to do these drill programs, where's that money going to come from? Is the junior market still going to be very much just the diehards playing around with the individual stocks?
Well, I certainly hope not. But yeah, I mean, we do need to see more. We are seeing the capital markets loosen up. We've seen some very big raises recently. And, you know, some of these smaller companies that do have very attractive projects, they're not having a problem raising money. And some of them only need to offer a half warrant to raise money. And even a few of them, some of them that I've invested in recently, don't need to offer warrants at all. You know, I have these very small and micro cap companies that are able to raise money without warrants. That's very bullish situation for that particular company. It shows the market that, hey, this project, you know, is so attractive that they don't have to offer a warrant to raise money. And it's still very much a stock picker's market here. It doesn't appear like we're very close to that dart throwers move where everything really starts to take off. So you just have to be very careful in your stock selection. And now more than ever, make sure that they have enough capital to last them for the rest of the year at least.
Well, Dave, you bring up an interesting point there about the stock picker versus the dart thrower, because when it's a raging bull market, we always say that even the turkeys will fly, even the turds will float. And so a lot of times when we've seen past cycles, there's been times where just the company has gold or silver in their name, they start going up.
Exactly.
We're clearly not in that kind of a scenario. Uh-huh. So it really highlights the importance of being a stock picker and picking the companies that, you, as you say, are cashed up, have good teams, have good assets. But is it possible there's just too many darn exploration and development companies? I mean, there's near 1,000 of them. And we're talking about the biggest dozen or so majors and maybe the 60 to 70 mid-tiers bulking up by having M&A so they get more attraction. Who in the world's going to invest in 1,000 different exploration and development companies? Are there just too many companies? And did some of them need to die in the last cycle and they somehow were Frankenstein and came back to life? Are there just too many competing arm-waving companies competing for the same amount of dollars now?
Absolutely. You know, we've talked about that for a long time, that when we have these bear cycles come in, our hope is that a lot of these companies go away. But then a lot of them, you know, they get a reprieve where they get some capital and these lifestyle companies continue. There's just too many of them. Yeah, I mean, I'd say 85 to 90% of the sector, you know, there are companies that I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. That's why, you know, you really have to do your due diligence. And I think that also is the case, even when you have the rising tide lifts all boats, because, you know, those matches burn a lot quicker when everything's going up, you know, because people see through the companies and like this company, this is a lifestyle company. You know, I understand that they have all these attractions that are getting these generalist investors coming in. But I, you know, you notice that a newsletter promotes it or they pay somebody a lot of money to put a promotional piece out. And, you know, a lot of that move comes from that. So you just have to be aware of which ones you're investing in, because I want to invest in companies. I want to invest my money into companies where I trust management. I know they've done it before. They're serially successful. They know what they're doing. They don't pay themselves a lot of money. They participate in all the financings. You know, they didn't get a bunch of cheap founder shares and are holding only those, and they only have a bunch of options. I want to invest in companies that believe in what they're doing. And that, you know, if, you know, because I've seen instances where I see a company and I see the fundamentals of the company, like, oh, this is a company that I know that somebody could come along and start promoting, but I know the management, you know, is very suspect. So even though it's a pretty good bet that the stock's going to go up, I'm not going to invest in it and I'm not going to recommend it to my subscribers, because I see through them. I know they're a lifestyle company. They might pop for a little while, but you never know when to sell a stock. As far as when to take your money and get off the ride, you know, it could continue going. You don't know how long the pump's going to go. They could be, you know, drilling out. They could only be stepping out, you know, only a few meters once they made a discovery. You know, they're not proving up proof of concept. They're just basically writing their discovery. And, you know, it's a very difficult business. And that's probably why I love it so much, because it's so extremely challenging to make money in this sector. But if you invest in the right companies and the right people, you know, you usually have a pretty good chance of success. I know I kind of went off on a tangent there. It wasn't your original question, but there it is.
So, Dave, what are you looking for in juniors then, especially ones with resources? Do you like juniors that already have a defined resource? And what size are you looking for? What is some of your due diligence when you're looking at these companies? Now, quite a few that do have a known resource, a lot of resources, over 1 million ounces still. So what isolates or stands out to you in terms of a good resource in a junior?
Yeah, in this environment, I like big. You know, I've been accumulating companies that are de-risking big resources with blue sky potential, you know, inside district scale land packages. You know, I get to know the management team. They have to be serially successful in doing this before. And there's quite a few out there that are still very cheap in relation to the gold price. They really haven't had their move yet. And yet, on the other hand, there's some that are consolidating near all-time highs. They're creating huge bases, which I believe to go much higher once the gold price gets over $2,100 an ounce. Yet there's also a lot of companies that have been ignored by the market and sold off by the market for one reason or another, but they still have multi-million ounce deposits that they're de-risking in safe jurisdictions. And some of those are forming like reverse head and shoulders, inverse head and shoulders bottoming patterns right now. But there's just not a lot of volume, not a lot of interest, a lot of apathy in a lot of these stocks. And in a few of them, I did really well on them during the past bull market. There's some of these companies that are still around that were de-risking these large projects, and they look much better now than they did during the last bull market. And during the last bull market, they went up 8, 9, 10 times. And now their project is further de-risked. They might even be at the finance stage, yet their stock price is much cheaper than it was back then. So, and the gold price is, you know, $500 higher. So, you know, it's all perspective, and it's all has to do with the people running the company, and do they have the access to capital to build it? And did they raise money at the right time? You know, their stock could be over diluted by now. You know, when they had that move, you know, they maybe only had, you know, 150, 200,000 shares out, and maybe they diluted at the wrong time when their share price was too low. And now they've got 1 billion shares out. You see that a lot too, where you see these companies, they've got these great projects, but they've raised too much money at the wrong times, and now they've got too many shares out.
There are a number of warning signs, right? And sometimes they're right in front of you for some of these juniors. But hey, I understand falling in love with some of these juniors, but we do need to understand that broadly, they're just not getting the same love. Hopefully they will soon, but they have really underperformed gold for quite a while here, that it's almost turning into more of the normal aspect of these juniors. But hopefully that all changes. Either way, there can always be some good stocks and standout stocks as long as the good work's being done. But right now, still, even good drill results largely being ignored. Dave, thank you as always for your time, buddy. Good conversation today. We'll chat again next week, and I hope you have a great rest of your week.
You too, Corey. Thanks a lot.